So, whatever happened to Dick Conant? There's a chance you met this outsized character through the New Yorker article Ben McGrath wrote about him in 2014. Or, like Ben, you met Dick Conant on a riverbank. Ben's was the Hudson. He called Dick Conant a waterborne Don Quixote, enthralling people he met with his encyclopedic knowledge, his overalls and unkempt Santa appearance, and his overstuffed red canoe. And that's where we left him in the New Yorker article. But then one day, his red canoe turned up without Dick, and Ben set out on a quixotic journey of his own to try to learn where he'd gone and how Dick Conant went from picture-perfect high school class president to American folk hero, or was it troubled misfit? The New York Times says Ben's new book, Riverman, An American Odyssey, belongs on a shelf next to John Krakauer's Into the Wild. Ben McGrath, I'm sure that was satisfying. But I'm wondering, is the stronger feeling, yeah, but I didn't find out what happened to him?
My stronger feeling is, yeah, but I didn't save him. Even though he was 20 years older than me, more than that, I felt a kind of paternal relationship to him. There was something a little poignant about our encounters, and I just felt a little bit guilty, actually, that I was drawn back into it and that I hadn't kept him afloat,
so to speak. Let's talk about that, because you did meet him when your neighbor up there in Piermont in upstate New York, right on the Hudson, he met him first. You saw Dick's filthy, overpacked canoe. He charmed you, as he did so many, but you did have these thoughts of, in fact, you called your friend and said, should we intervene? This guy's saying he wants to paddle from upstate New York all the way down to Naples, Florida.
When I first met him, I was just kind of blown away and baffled and mesmerized. It was just a lot. Mm-hmm. So I had to track him down again the next day. He'd moved on. He was another 12 miles or so further south. And then we really got to talking. And that was when I began to both continue to be amazed, but also to worry about him a little bit.
Right.
And then, yes, my neighbor and I went, we kind of went to try and rescue him.
Yeah, well, that didn't work. But you also, in writing the first article that you wrote about him, started fact-checking things that he said. There's a moment when you're thinking, oh, my God, I'm going to have to call these people he talked about. You called a diner, a bar. What did people say to you when they heard you were calling about this guy, Dick Conant?
Without exception, they would just immediately say, are you kidding me? We were just talking about him on Wednesday. And in some cases, these were people who hadn't seen him in like 20 years.
Yeah. He made such an impact on people. And by the way, where had he paddled?
So he had done at least five major trips on the Salmon River in Idaho. He had done the Yellowstone to the Missouri to the Mississippi, so from the border of Wyoming and Montana down to New Orleans. He'd gone from kind of western New York down to South Texas. And then he'd done an even crazier than the one I met him on, where he started in Minnesota on the headwaters of the Mississippi, went all the way down and then over on the Gulf and then upstream on five rivers, the Mobile, the Tombigbee, the Tennessee, the Holston. Hitched a ride over the Appalachians, got on the James River in Virginia, and went out towards the Atlantic Ocean. I mean, he just kind of strung bodies of water together.
Right. And all along the way, strung these friends together. And we mentioned the canoe was overstuffed. Kind of so was he. Some of the descriptions of him: an old art major with Falstaffian appetites, a Studs Terkel of the riverbank, a canoeing Santa. And then he's gone. Now, he had your name and number in this mass of stuff that was in his canoe when it was found. So suddenly you become the point person for Dick Conant.
So, yeah, I mean, one of the things that I was able to do initially, and I didn't realize at the time, when they called me, they were actually kind of hoping that I would say, oh, thanks, you found my canoe. Mm. I was able to put them in touch with his closest sibling. He had grown up in a family of nine. Gradually, other siblings of his reached out to me and started sharing with me either the contents of the canoe itself, having been dried out in the sun, or pieces of writing that he'd mailed to them over the years. That eventually led to some storage lockers out west in Utah and Montana. It kind of became almost like a treasure hunt.
Yeah, well, not unlike his canoe. Stuffed with stuff. You realized he didn't have a home. He was living on a riverbank out west. And you also find out that he was a brilliant student. He was a leader. He was an athlete. And then we find out an artist, he could write, he could talk like Mark Twain. What happened?
Well, around the time he went off to college, which is kind of, you know, Woodstock era. In fact, he went to Woodstock, and by the testimony of his friends, had an interaction with Jimi Hendrix.
Of course he did.
Yeah, exactly. That was kind of everyone's perspective, right? It was like, of course, Dickey, of all people, would be the one that Hendrix locked eyes with and said, keep the Pope off the moon, too. But around that time, he got kind of invested in the counterculture, like many people, and he started exhibiting symptoms of some kind of paranoia. And as time went on, the way his family described it to me, it just became a kind of a pattern where he always was worried that he was overstaying his welcome. And so he tried to get into medical school. He tried to work at a hospital. And eventually he would think that everyone was conspiring against him and he would have to pack up and relocate.
Well, here's where it's so hard to figure out. You met so many people who loved him and wondered about him. There was a NASA programmer who carried Conant and his canoe over the mountains back in 2010. He needed a ride. He portages him. A minnow merchant named Bunny, who survived Hurricane Katrina, got shot and was left for dead by her landlord. I mean, some of the people he interacted with at bars and diners, they could have their own books. But we're hearing about him. And I know, you know, Ben, I'm betting that a lot of people might feel they know a Dick Conant. I know my high school mates are going to recognize who I'm talking about. Class president, brilliant, great athlete, perfect person. And ours didn't make it out of his 20s. And I'm wondering, do you think it was a bad acid trip? Or maybe did drugs cover a mental break? Or maybe he just really was a person who couldn't fit in. But then again, he had a brother who committed suicide and some family issues. You know, maybe he just was somebody who had to live on a river. Or maybe he was mentally ill.
He was mentally ill. I mean, he did sort of tick all the boxes that you can kind of point to if you're looking for a rosebud moment, whether it was a bad acid trip or, you know, an alcoholic father. He even had a questionable episode involving a priest when he was in high school. Mm. And as you say, his brother committed suicide. I also think genetically he had a condition that wasn't entirely unique in his family. Mm. And he struggled. And you're right. I think we all do know Dick Conant. Almost everywhere I turned when reporting this story, other people would kind of emerge, not necessarily with their troubles, but with their exotic sideshow passions and adventures. Mm. And everyone knows someone else who has almost like a book's worth of adventures in their life that are not being told.
Well, meanwhile, he had three books. You found the manuscripts.
Yep.
Beautifully written. We see a lot of his words in your book. Does that give you some solace that you told his story when he couldn't?
That's certainly what I've tried to do. He mentioned to me his writing and in fact that he hoped to get published. And he talked about potentially sending me snippets of his writing. In the end, he didn't get around to sending me those by email, but I found them, you know, after the fact. And I did kind of see part of my purpose in this as telling the story for him that he wasn't able to tell himself.
Yeah. Well, and Ben McGrath, do you think Dick Conant's still out there somewhere?
Unfortunately, he hasn't accessed his bank account since the canoe was discovered. So if he's out there, he's doing it under another identity, which would be kind of, you know, remarkable and resourceful in its own way, and I wouldn't put it past him. But, you know, I think some people I've found, including my neighbor who first met him, have chosen, really, it's important to them to believe that he's still out there doing what he wants, and I don't want to disabuse them of that possibility.
So much work went into this book. You know, Dick had a rough life paddling and portaging, a life he loved and chose. But there you are following these breadcrumbs. Why?
There was some part of me that wanted to protect him, and I wasn't able to. And then when I got the phone call, I just felt this obligation because it was sort of like if I wasn't going to do this, nobody was. And he had gone to such lengths to record all he was doing and to amount to something. You mentioned earlier that he was Mr. Picture Perfect in high school. He was a star who didn't turn out to be a star by conventional means. And I think he felt unrecognized for what he was trying to do as a middle-aged man. It became a kind of a passion project for me to restore that sense of accomplishment to him on his own behalf. And then part of it was also, as I made the phone calls around the country, I kept meeting people not unlike myself who were really moved by him, even though they'd only known him for 3 hours. They would, you know, were breaking down in tears on the side of the road to hear about this. And it was, it just kind of had a snowballing effect.
Yeah. That's Ben McGrath. His exploration of the life of Dick Conant is Riverman, An American Odyssey. Ben, thank you so much.
Thank you.